I could listen to that music all day long. That's titled Cuba Mali, and it's from Afrocubism, the award-winning Grammy-nominated album featuring a collaboration between musicians from Mali and Cuba. You're hearing the perfect symmetry of West African and Afro-Cuban music, the rhythms and melodic patterns being of the same derivation. The album Afrocubism was released in 2010, and we heard Eliades Ochoa. We may know him from the Buena Vista Social Club on guitar, Jose Angel Martinez on double bass, Jorge Marturel on congas, Ansel Odit on rhythm guitar, and Iglis Ochoa on guiro. And the Malian musicians, all well-known in their own country and abroad. Toumani Diabaté, who is one of my favorites, an extraordinary person on kora. Basku Kouyaté on goni. Kass Madi Diabaté on vocals, you will hear him later. And Jilimadi Tunkara on guitars. And Fode Lassana Diabaté on balafon, we just heard that. And Baba Sissoko on talking drum. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. It is Tuesday, October the 28th, and today we're talking about politics, since we're smack in the middle of the political frenzy called midterm elections. More specifically, we'll be talking about your ideas about what our political focus and priorities should be. Well, of course, as I said, midterm elections are at their very peak, and the nation's focus is even more dissipated than usual, driven by daily polls and regional contests that people are watching, and high-profile personalities and hot-button issues affecting public policy, and, of course, the media's own interest in persuading us one way or the other as to what we ought to think and what we ought to do, who we ought to vote for. They have their own vested interests. But in this dizzying political atmosphere, it's easy to lose sight of what our political focus and priorities should be. And therefore, that is the discussion that we are going to be having today. How do we define or redefine the elements of what we consider to be an appropriate or progressive or just plain just political agenda? The election season notwithstanding, we are clear that so far, I mean, I don't know what you're thinking, you let me know, but we are clear that we are all dissatisfied. We're dissatisfied, very much so, with what we have to deal with as governing systems at the national, state, local levels. It's just, they're just not functioning well. And that, of course, is directly related to the people not, how should I say, not getting exercised enough about formulating a standard and holding to it, that these things that we have to deal with in everyday life, they just shouldn't be. But they are. They exist. And they are compounding the pressures that we have to live with every single day. And then again, we go full circle. Well, why is this happening? It is happening. Frank answer, short answer, it is happening because we are allowing it. But we're not hearing about the alternatives. We're not hearing about what is on the plate, what is on the table for our consideration, and how will it assist us as a society to move in a positive direction where true democracy actually is attainable. And I told you about how I define democracy. It is not about voting and the number of people voting. It is about when you want to measure how democratic a society is, you look at the access that the people have to the strategic resources. That's how you measure democracy. The business of voting is merely to put in place a governing system that will assure the access, the relatively democratic access to these resources. So they're related, but they're not to be confused as being the same. What is our idea of a democratic government? What is our idea of a just society? How do we get it? We are stuck, it seems, because there should be, right about now, and not just about the midterm elections, so to speak, but in the climate of the midterm elections, we ought to be having an incredible array of alternatives before us, building to a larger movement that will certainly turn this system around, this non-functioning pathological system around. We ought to be just bombarded with all these different thoughts, all these different parties, all these different methods, all these different choices. And yet it seems that we are stuck still in this twiddly-dee, twiddly-dum kind of choice, and that's as far as the discussion goes. It doesn't go beyond the standing order. Well, I have a view that people do have alternative thoughts about these things, and let's put them on the table today. Let's get some ideas about what you think the discussion, the focus, the priorities should be in crafting another way. 888-874-4888. Let's have that discussion, begin that discussion. We've come to it in different ways. We've talked about your political consciousness, how far it has developed, what it is you see as the way to go forward, workable ideas, the ways we ought to think and rethink our reality. How could we accommodate all of the needs that are so evident? How do we create a more just, equal, and democratic society? What has to happen? How do we break down this pernicious thread of race and race oppression in this country that is so intricately woven in the fabric of American life? How do we confront all these things and still move forward and still progress? Not and still, and progress. Take out that word. I edit that word out. Still. And progress. This is where we are. Is it because we don't have people thinking about these things? Is it because we don't have the will? What is it that we don't have at this time? A range of choices to choose from, a range of ideas to ponder, a range of actions to take. Whose job is it to formulate that? Ma'at from New York, you're on the air.
Yeah, I was about to turn my other phone down. You just caught me. Good day, Utrice.
Hello, how are you?
Good, thank you, and to the PRN family. My response is we first have to figure out what the heck is going on in this respect. I think one of the most brilliant things I've heard, well, two things, was from David Icke, and that is they have us watching a movie, okay? And the other is, someone who's basically a working class friend, a plumber, and he said to me once that you have 7 billion people and you can only come up with 5 or 6 different systems, so we know how we get off track when those on the right have one definition of socialism, Chris Hedges would have another, and we never come together to deal with the larger problem. So I think part of the parsing of it is what Ralph Nader is saying these days, and in his new book, And that is, in fact, Utrice, he was on Book TV, which is a weekend program on C-SPAN, one of the C-SPAN channels, and he was brought there by the Cato Institute, and was so fascinating because I started to change the channel when I saw Cato, because, you know, it's usually the right-wing usual suspects. And they had two commentators there to reflect on Ralph's thoughts, and they were very respectful and agreeing with him, essentially, that we need to go on that provide. I think that would make a big difference, because some of the right has it right on certain aspects, such as they were some of the first to look at 9/11, and that wasn't what's really happening in terms of, you know, the real deal. And certain other, maybe one aspects I would agree with. I had a dad that was born in 1902 in New York, and probably because of what he saw growing up, he always got me on the side of the Second Amendment. So I think we have to go beyond what Jordan Maxwell explained. He would show an ego. He would show the left side, the right wing, and he'd say, but look at the one head. So I'll listen to responses regarding my thoughts, and thank you for taking this call.
Thank you for offering them, but in the middle of all of that, Matt, you didn't tell us what you were thinking. Oh, she's gone. All right. Well, she put on for us a range of ideas, but I'm looking also to figure out if you can help us understand when you call in 888-874-4888. When you call in, could you give us an idea of what it is you have culled from all of the things that you have been exposed to and you have been pondering? What have you distilled from all of that as a workable idea or an element of a workable idea? I was in Newark just last week, twice, at this organization, REFAL, headquarters, as they call it. And I was there, the first time I was there was roughly about 20 years ago. I mean, I'd known this group quite well as they started out. And I was very, very pleased to see a building, a bricks and mortar building. And when I went in, there were people, young children, learning. They were having dinner. They were after dinner. They were involved in other study. The community was moving into the building. The building was beginning. It had the sense of being a nerve center for the community. Now, Newark is under new mayoral leadership. The son of Amiri Baraka, Raz Baraka, is mayor. And they explained to me that what they're hoping to do, Baraka and community groups are hoping to just ramp up this notion of community, to redefine community, to get involved literally at the grassroots level. That was a very, very promising thing to see. And that is what we need. That's part of the work I think we have to do. Sarah from Dallas, you're on the air.
Greetings to you, Utrice.
Thank you, and to you too, Sarah.
Okay, I'm glad you made it back safely to warmer climates.
Yeah, I did.
Yes, ma'am, as well as greetings to the PRN audience. Utrice, your topic, I didn't get to hear the call from the beginning. I came in at the tail end when my aunt was getting ready to go off, so I did not know that you were doing an open forum, and I did not get the gist. Are you covering on the political basis, the political theater that we're getting ready to be geared up for that's in the next?
We're taking in what we're discussing today is the elections aside, and we know all of that. You just mentioned a key word, theater. Mm-hmm. These things aside, what are we putting forward? What are we advancing? What is there to consider as a healthy alternative to the problems, the myriad problems we have been defining? What is an element? Give an element or some thought about that. Put that on the table.
Well, it all gets back to community, as you said. I've always tried to get us to focus on community within the respective areas that we reside within. And one of it is to get out, outreach, get to know the people that lives in your area, if make them aware of things that are happening in the event that most of us are not aware of things. We're just busy going to work, getting our children to school, and involved in our own little bubble. And we just have to become more aware of circumstances and situations around us, because this is what a lot of people, they bargain on, is that you remain oblivious to things or just ignore them until they just all of a sudden blow up in front of you. And as you were stating that, you know, your visit to Newark and these other major urban centers throughout the country that is under attack, I managed to hear your broadcast from yesterday, and you were speaking with Abiyomi and what is going on with Reverend Pinckney and what's going on in Benson Harbor and, you know, his trial over there. And it just have to remind us that we are under assault. You know, we are under assault globally, and it's not just locally here within the United States. It's a global assault. And a lot of us want to think that because you see a few figureheads here and there that is trying to tell us that, okay, black people are advancing, that we are much better off than we were before. And I'm asking you, I said, well, who is making this determination to say that we are better off? Is it the same people who put you in the bad position is now trying to tell you that you all of a sudden you are better off? Because I really and truly, Utrice, cannot see anything better than where we were before. Because I'm seeing it is getting worse. Because when you're looking at the incarceration, the people who are on there, some side of police control, whether it be probation, parole, you know, on all of these things that are going on, you're really not getting any better. Unemployment, you can look and see maybe gas prices are dropping, but the gas prices could drop to a penny, and if you don't have a job or a car to put gas into, what difference does it make?
But in the middle of all of this, you clear about the manifestation of the problems. What is, from your perspective, a workable idea?
Workable idea, Utrice, we're going to have to get back. You know, a lot of people don't like to hear going back to where we were, getting back into the agricultural aspects of one of the first, if you are not feeding yourself, Utrice, you're not in control of your food supply, you're not in control of the education of your offspring, then you are in a world of hurt. Because if you can take control, because these are the basic things that we have to do. I know for myself, when I started school, Utrice, I know the basic to write my name. I can count, write my name. No basic things that I was taught at home. My parents and my older siblings, they were my first teacher, and they ensured that I was well prepared when I started school. As a matter of fact, I skipped a few grades because I was so advanced. And if we don't take it upon ourselves to ensure the education of our young, we're leaving it up to people to impart and put ideas into our children's head, which is going to be counteractive to what we want them to have, then we have a problem. You are raising one generation after another generation just digging a deeper hole for yourself because we don't want to take on the responsibility of the education of our young. No animal, Utrice, in the wild, or even dumb animals as we call them, they are not leaving it up to chance that their offspring is going to be left out there for some other species to come along and educate them on how to hunt, how to protect themselves. It does not happen. But we are the only ones, but we continuously do these things. We are not in charge of our food supply. Most of us don't know what it is to dig a garden, plant a garden, how to grow food. I had the unfortunate mistake, Utrice, I went to the grocery store to buy some cucumbers. And talking about Monsanto and food, I started cutting up the cucumbers to make us a salad for dinner. And when I cut open the cucumbers, Utrice, I got picked up one of those GMO specials, I guess, in the supermarket. Because when I cut open the thing, the whole thing was hollow in the inside, Utrice. There was no seeds. All I saw was flesh on the side of the cucumber, and it was a big old space down the middle.
Well, because the food should not contain the seeds or the possibilities of renewable food sources. So they're denying you the seeds. You'll have to buy that and pay a licensing fee for the seeds. But thank you for your ideas today, Sarah. Thanks for putting those things out. But finish up. You sound like you need to finish up. Oh, you're gone. Okay. Joel from New York. Great to meet you, incidentally. Thank you for calling in today.
Good morning, Yatrice. Good afternoon.
Thank you.
Whatever it is. You know, and also it was a real pleasure meeting you last week.
Thank you.
You know, I back when I was sort of growing up in the 60s, coming of age in the 60s, we always said that you had to have an objective understanding of reality before you could act. And the word objectivity, I think, has disappeared from the lexicon of progressives for many, many reasons that maybe we can go into some other time. But once you look at objective reality, I think you have a better conception of how you can respond to it. Rather than simply reacting to situations that develop, and they always develop, especially now, by taking a step back and really discerning what is going on and looking at how the world works and why it's working the way it does, you can then begin to react. And what we have right now, I think, are in the midst of all of these grave problems that we talk about all every day, we have a world economic crisis that seems to offer a kind of strategic opening that I think we last saw in the early 1930s. And we have an opportunity to organize the unemployed, to educate the public about, say, the way banks really work, and hasten the what I would call a legitimation crisis of the whole system. Once we recognize that we are in a new kind of political economy, in which we are being rapidly reconfigured into a kind of neo-feudal oligarchy, I think we can then begin to perceive an alternative to all of this stuff. And we can hasten this legitimation crisis of the whole system. And so what we need is a politics that, first of all, is predicated on anti-globalization, a politics that understands that the financial system is a criminal, and that it is being protected by the institutions of government and those who run the institutions of government, that we recognize that the established political system that we have right now is filled with parties that are essentially dead and that have atrophied, that we have to we need a new kind of lexicon. We need mutual aid societies in the community level in which people step up to shelter the homeless and feed the poor and politicize the under and unemployed. And then we need a kind of coordinated national response of local communities to allow this to grow from a local to something that's much larger. But even though we have many, many grassroots organizations that have developed, we don't have this kind of coordination that can make it national. On the contrary, it's the extreme right that seems to be able to rally the grassroots in the U.S. and Europe. I mean, look what the right did after Goldwater loss. Most people say that the right developed with the Reagan Revolution, but I disagree. It began right after the 64 election. They began to seize control over school boards. They took their time, and eventually they won control over local and state offices. So I'm not saying that we have the luxury of time. We don't anymore because of all the unintended consequences that face us. Especially the environmental consequences and the ostensible crash of the economy, which is coming. So I believe that so long as radicals cling to familiar rituals and to its fragmented view of itself, it won't be able to respond to this crisis and emergency or to convince the rest of the citizenry of our country that a more just and egalitarian world is a world order is possible. And so I think we have a big job ahead of us, a job that requires the education of the public, that requires that we, all of us, commit ourselves to this work of citizenship, that some of us, especially the young, recognize that they need to take on positions of radical leadership, which will require sacrifice, and to recognize that the power structure is going to respond, in some cases violently, the more successful we are.
Do you, from what you have said, and you've laid out quite a comprehensive picture, is there anything close to it now, or do you find that the fragmentation has pretty much diluted potential political strength?
Well, you know, I think it differs from community to community. You just mentioned the kind of participatory democracy that's slowly starting to emerge in Newark. And I think the key there is that you have leadership that is sensitive to these needs. So what? So, again, I think it depends upon community to community. And I think what we need now is leadership on the local level, on the grassroots level, that could help to mobilize mass groups of people to do the kind of sacrificial things that are going to be necessary. I'm sorry, I can't be a little bit more. I can actually be more specific about some of the things that can happen. I mean, I think that as the economy grows worse, and believe me, I hate to be such a prophet of doom, but I mean, it's just so obvious that we live in a Ponzi economy. Everything is based on a bubble, and everything is about to burst. And I think that people who are working and people who aren't working, in a way, recognize this, maybe not on a conceptual level. So one of the things that I think we need to do is to talk about things like worker councils. I really do. I think that should be one component of it. It means that any institution, say a university or a factory or whatever it is, the participants would run it, or should say that we would like to run it. We would like to be on the board of directors. We would run it through councils in which people participate, where they can make decisions. It's not unlike a faculty, which is about as close to the model in a university or a high school as we get in our world. There are outside controls, but the factory pretty much makes decisions of what happens to the faculty, internally. So I think that we can make life more appealing by calling for things like that. There are many, many other things that we can call for, and it's happening in some places around the country. For instance, in a city like Cleveland, which is really, you know, like Detroit on its death throes, you're seeing worker councils and worker cooperatives developing all over the place. And then workers begin to make the kinds of decisions that affect their lives that usually aren't made by them. You might decide to work 80 hours a week, but then you might decide that that's too much, so you make a democratic decision. So what I'm saying is that all of these models that need to be developed have to be predicated on the notion of participatory democracy. We have to move away from this traditional political role where we give it to these politicians who now are doing nothing more than reflecting the oligarchic nation that the country has turned into. So that's what we need to do.
Thank you so much for your contribution today. From New York, Todd, you're on the air. Todd, you're there. Todd is not there. From New York also, Allie, you're on the air.
Hi, Utrecht. How are you doing?
Fine, thank you.
Okay, you were talking about workable ideas, and I do agree that the best idea will have to come from communities. But then I was just thinking about also that you were talking about New York, and then I was thinking, together with that community, I was thinking what the Young Lord and also the Black Panther did, and then I was also integrating that with what Occupy Wall Street was trying to do. To me, yes, it could come from community, but when the government see this community doing something, what is the first thing that the government does is to attack the community. Somehow, they always try to take away what these people are implementing or are developing. I wanted to know, how long do you think what the people are doing in New York will last? Because if you take a look at the last example, it's Occupy Wall Street. I'm not going to tell you that Occupy Wall Street in that park, a lot of this idea will have come. But I'm going to tell you one idea that it came out from there that I participated. When Stop and Frisk came around and Carl Dix and Cornel West were trying to bring people together to fight Stop and Frisk in New York, I heard it the first time in that park. So, but look what happened to the people in that park when they were trying to go to different communities to try to work. They tried to work also with the people that they were being evicted from the houses in Brooklyn. And they occupy some of those houses. And what I'm thinking about, yes, it's through their community, but the government eventually will take you away. The government, and one perfect example of that is Reverend Pinky, what he has been doing in Michigan. This man is trying to do and to get his community back to the feet. And what is happening? This company, Whirlpool, is trying to destroy him. It's trying to put him in jail for working with his community. And this is one thing that I'm thinking about. How the government, they always get their hands in to destroy you. They did it with the Young Lord. They did it especially with the Black Panthers. How many people? And also look at what happened in Philadelphia. How they bombarded these people in Philadelphia. They try to build communities. And they know, especially if you are a community that will benefit people of color, it's even worse because they get infiltration. They infiltrate those movements, and they work against you. And so, yes, I believe it's through communities, but the government are always going to be there to destroy you.
Well, nobody could ever disagree with anything that you have just said, because it's all true, it's all pertinent, it's all real. But it's also part of the consciousness of those people, and that's one of the things that they, you hear the word sacrifice. One of the things that they are prepared to do, and this is the brave world of community activism, people understand implicitly what they are up against, but they're also called to play a role in leadership. And they are willing to take on that sacrifice. It's an extraordinary thing, and we don't celebrate enough the people who have or who put themselves on the line in service of a larger objective. So you're quite correct with that.
I'm one of those people. Actually, the day on October 22nd, I was on top of this truck because we did the day of. Of protests against staff mass incarceration and also stolen lives. Stolen lives is the lives of these people that they have been taken away by the police department. We did it all around the country, but we did it in New York. I appeared on Democracy Now in the second part of the. I know that you don't support the program, but I'm going to tell you what the media did. The only program that it actually show up, the only media that it show up because it was a blackout with the regular media was RT, Democracy Now, and some independent media. They didn't really cover it, but it was a big, big protest. And as you know New York City, we were in the middle of the rush hour, 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and half of 6th Avenue. That was a big thing. And then one gentleman that I participated there was a gentleman who used an axe to hurt some cops in New York City, I think in Brooklyn. And this gentleman who is part of the group, right away the media is interviewing him, accusing him that he actually almost collaborated to this guy who used the axe. And this is how they take you down. And all of us, we know that we are part of this group, that eventually they're going to attack us. Somehow we will be attacked.
What, therefore, do you see as the process, the education that needs to go on within the community of people who, like you, are in the vanguard, let's put it that way, of movements that are likely to attract government reprisals?
Well, staff mass incarceration is one of them. I'm going to tell you right now because some of the members, I'm not part of that group. Some of the members belong to the Revolution Party, the Communist Revolution Party. I'm not part of that group, but I know some of the they would be attracted. And one of them is, I don't know if you know him, Carl Dix is a big mm-hmm. member of that group. And I know that every time that he shows up in different area, the police is right there. As a matter of fact, he went to Ferguson, and he was away he was taken with Cornel West, and I know some people definitely, and this is some of the thing, even if you do the right thing, the government eventually they will get to you. But we just have to be out there because even it's like Occupy Wall Street, maybe nothing really happened, but you know what? The word is out there. People are talking, and that's why we have to make people to talk, to change their mind about what's happening to them at this moment and what is happening to all of us at this moment.
Thank you so much, Ali, for your call today.
Okay, thank you.
From Washington, D.C., Mike, you're on the air.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you. What are your thoughts?
Well, I really think that most people aren't really aware of reality. Like, they're, like, either stuck in the past or they're so concerned with the, you know, the day-to-day drudgery that, like, they're totally missing the point. The point is that where we're at today was set in motion decades prior, and it's the result of long-range planning. Like, you know, it's the technocracy that exists was written about, you know, back in the 20s and 30s, and people set it in motion. But there has been no countervailing force or long-range strategic planning on the other side. They just kind of seem to invest in either the status quo or, you know, like conservation. So you really have one group of people that have set the agenda and moved everything forward, and everybody else is just kind of confused. To me, that's how it seems. Hello? Did I lose you? Hello?
You're listening to PRN.FM. I'm Patrice Lead. And your calls at 888-874-4888. Mike, did we lose Mike? Well, we lost Mike. I'm so sorry. DX from Los Angeles, you're on the air.
Hello, Patrice. How are you?
Hello. Fine, thank you.
Good, good. I think a couple of the callers have hit it right on the head, and the thing is, well, Mike that just called, I'll kind of try to pick up somewhere where he left off. This is a process that is actually coming to fruition and culmination in our lifetime right now that was started decades ago. And as he was saying, I think, there's been no real pushback. And the farther along down the rabbit hole we've gotten here, or into the process we've gotten, rather, the more intense the efforts are to keep the blindfold on people and keep people in the dark. And this is the reason why people are the way they are, is, you know, and why our message is so hard to get through.
But what we want to know today, what we want to focus on is, what is that message? Where is it coming from? What is it that we ought to be thinking about?
Well, see, I contend also that we don't control any of the systems that give people their perceptions and their reality, because perception is becomes your lived reality, and when you have the systems like the media, the TV, and the radio, and all this that have for years and decades been lulling people into complacency and teaching them one side of the story, and it goes from, you know, decade to decade, and with no real pushback. There's periods within this time that we have been able to push back from the left, but it's always shut down, and it's becoming harder and harder to do that. As Ali indicated, Well, just like Allie, I went out to a few meetings of the Occupy Movement when they were here in Los Angeles, and she's right that the government's going to crack down on you, and they're going to, and the more effective your message is, the harder they're going to hit back. What the Occupy Movement did, they had the biggest breakthrough since the 1960s in this country because they hit on a universal theme that everybody could understand, that was simple and was true in most people's lives. And that core message was, look at all these people over here who have nothing, and look at this 1% little bitty group of people over here who have everything. And everybody identified with that, 99%, 1%. So that message was so effective that they had to react and do something quick to knock it down. So what I'm saying is we have to be prepared for their counter to whatever we do, but we also have to be more effective at trying to get through to people. And the actual workings of it, we're going to have to discuss that and try to figure that out because people are so far gone in what
All
really
right,
actual reality is that we have a job to do.
I get you. I get you on all of those points. I'm still asking, from your perspective, what is a discussion that we ought to be having, and how would it matter? How would it change current conditions?
Well, we are having the discussion we should be having on your show every single day and every single week. We have the discussions. I just think it's the reach. I just think we're having the right discussions. Most of us here on the left that are trying to understand the issues and push the issues into other people's faces and get them to see. But I think that we are up against something that is so pervasive, and I mean the brainwashing and the dumbing down of people, that we've let go all this time to, we haven't let it go, but we've been losing all this time. And they've been gaining ground, and it's gotten so bad that it's hard to get that second part of your question across, to try and convince people that, hey, there's a different reality to this different issue or that issue or whatever than you think you know. And so we're having the conversations, but we're talking to each other, I guess is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we have to find a way to fight against the other message that they get all the time, and I'm talking about the general public, because we all know people who are like us and think like us, and we have no problem. We can get through them. It's because what you need, I think it was Einstein that said, you need 3% of the people or something like that for a movement to be successful. We need more people.
Well, actually, that's a maxim of marketing. You need a 3% return, and you're doing really good at that.
Well, what I'm saying is we need a bigger percentage of the population to understand the issues and to be on the right side. Because people, I talk to people all the time that say things that make no sense because that's what's been drummed into their head. And then you get them to sit down and think about it, and they go, oh, well, you know, you're right. That doesn't make any sense. But most people don't sit down and think about things in that manner. They just parrot what they've been told. So my thing is we're having the conversations, but we're talking to the choir. We're preaching to the choir.
Okay. And that's a fair assessment, because I myself have said it, that parties that are burgeoning now, emerging, or wanting to appeal to the broader community ought to get really exercised about it. They really ought to.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you so much for your call today. Thank you.
Thank you, and you have a great
day. Luis from New Jersey, you're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to, I don't know, maybe this idea would work out. Maybe if there was, like, a rich person out there who would want to invest, like, on a printing press or, like, a local project or something, because I think it really needs to start out with the people who, you know, don't have jobs right now, and I don't know. I feel like that's the way we could tackle the system, because obviously it's really predatory in its nature. And It just, you know, you see it all the time with gentrification, things like that. So I think we need to start, you know, promoting our own cultures and communities of, like, our, of you know, Latin Americans, African Americans. And I think a good step in that direction would be, you know, a printing press, which would basically allow us to, you know, discuss alternatives with our own people, people who are going through the same struggles. And, yeah, that's about it.
Okay. Do you see any crossover at all, or do you see that it needs to start literally from square one?
The thing is, like, I actually used to listen to WDAI show from this era, and I just saw it. Just, you know, you just saw the collapse of an alternative media, you know, and that, you know, it really bothers that, like, it's what's become, you know. There's a huge, you know, it is a private entity, so it always works in its own interest, and they'll always vilify certain political figures in different parts of the world, and, you know, it's all for a cause, you know. There's always an invasion behind it, so I think we need to start with our own people and, you know, try to inform each other. And I don't know if it's a printing press. I don't know if it's maybe supporting for, like, our own radio station where the government doesn't, you know, charge WBAI huge amounts of money to the point where it can't even exist. And, you know, you lose a voice that, you know, could impact, you know, the local community in a positive way.
Thank you very much, Luis, for your call. Very, very instructive. From Manhattan, Mike, you're on the air.
Hello, Yatrice. How are you?
Fine, thank you. How
good,
are you?
Good. Great show, as usual.
Well, it's everybody's show.
I'm sorry, what?
It's everybody's show.
That's
right?
True. That is very true. You make it so. Yes, it is everyone. And I'm glad you do. What's going on for me is basically when I went to the environmental march, I was really happy to see a lot of young people because I'm, like, well, over 30. But I saw a lot of young people there. And it was great because I think they really are committed to making change. But what I have noticed, because I have been an activist for Vietnam and LGBT rights, women's rights, what I'm really seeing, though, as us being adults or over 30, is that there really isn't support that I see for, like, the people, the young people who were in Occupy, who were trying to learn how to be effective. And I think that for us who are over 30, we really need to give the youth more support, because the trade-off is that they're very good on digital thinking and marketing and all those things, which is really, I think now, which is sort of the new wave of really getting things done. And I was very saddened to see that. I think with Occupy, now this is just my opinion, I think with Occupy and seeing some of the way the police handled themselves in New York City, like police superintendents were not supposed to be dealing directly with the protesters, were out there punching them in the face. So for people over 30, I think it's our job to go to court to support the youth when that kind of thing happened, which I don't think that did. Hopefully some people went to support them, but I think they're kind of surprised that, you know, in a way they're the new Negroes, in that I think we're surprised by how heavy the police came down. And for me, who had done activist work, I wasn't surprised to see it. So I think in that area, that's the trade-off. Our knowledge, which has been very hard earned, and combining it with their ability to really reach the media. And the last piece for me is, I saw a Koch brothers ad on TV the other day, and I realized if it was the religious right, all the little old ladies would have been writing and getting to the ad agency and complaining, whereas, you know, these Koch ads are going on. They serviced about a month ago, I think. And that's an area where we need support from the youth to find out what ad agency they're using, and to start contacting the ad agencies and saying, we're not going to use your products if you're really going to support the Koch brothers, and also the fracking. So that's my opinion. What do you think?
Well, I mean, I think you have a good idea about the implementation of at ground level of what people want to do. But I'm asking, really, what is the conversation that we ought to be having?
The conversation, I guess, I would say with youth, either in a group or singly, so to really help them to support. I guess the reason I think that that's important for me is hearing how Obama administration in the first year was mostly young people. And after the first year, they started to leave in their jobs. So, and they're also in their internships. A lot of them left because they were discouraged. So, yeah, I guess that's my area because I feel there are hope. And the discussion I need to have is one that I'm having with homeless teens and talking to them about the dynamics of a lot of them have been from religious right families who have been thrown out because they didn't believe the same way that their parents believed, or they were gay or they were lesbian. And so that's where I'm doing some work or have done work because I feel that's really directly affected by the personal being the political. So that's what I have been doing. That's the last thing I did. So, yeah, I guess my conversation is to, for me to, like, step aside because I've been pissed off for so long, and it was great to be an activist because a lot of us in our generation was pissed off, which we needed to be. But I think there's a next step. And so I guess my conversation is with the youth and trying to support them more when they do take action. And there are some things I've learned that they may need to know so that we can utilize our strength, which is our youth. And I'm so happy that they're much less concerned about sex, race, all of those issues, and are heading in the right direction. So, yeah, that's what I'm sort of aiming for.
Well, thank you so much for your call. Very, very, very wonderful to hear.
Thank you so much.
And that brings us to the end of our program today. And we really need to begin this conversation in a more extended form because we really need to put new meaning to that word activist. It means that we are active in some kind of work, building community, restructuring community, retrieving community, doing whatever it is we can to create a more just society. And whatever it is that we can do, we ought to start rethinking this conversation that we ought to be having and the actions that we ought to be taking strictly at the local level. All the stuff, all this politics that's around us, we know what it means and we can figure out where we are with respect to these crazy decisions that are made every day. But somewhere we ought to kind of put the brakes on a little bit and start focusing intensely on what it is we really need to do as a society, as a group of people, the issues that need to be confronted, and whether we're up to taking on the task of making things better for the new generations. Thank you so much. Coming up next is The Infectious Myth with David Crow, and you would want to stay tuned here at PRN.FM. Reach me at leadstories@gmail.com or on Facebook, Lead Stories with Eutrice Lead. Thank you so much for your calls today. A pleasure and a great, great, great privilege to be in your company.